You're listening to Upfront on the Voice of America. Thank you for joining us. I'm Jackson Vunganyi. Now, lately, we've been talking a lot about social media. From Facebook to Twitter, Instagram, and others, the conversation surrounding these platforms has mostly been about how they continue to have a corrosive influence on our society, especially when it comes to spreading misinformation. In fact, various studies have shown that people who get their news primarily through social media tend to be less well-informed and more likely to be exposed to misinformation. But there is undoubtedly another side to social media, a side that we have covered on this show for many years when platforms like Twitter were in their nascent stages. When we started talking about social media over a decade ago, it was about how it has transformed our societies and created platforms for community engagement. It was also mostly about how social media has given voice to millions around the world to mobilize around issues of common interest, issues like human rights, social justice, civic activism, and many others. So Facebook and its issues aside, social media clearly has its advantages, and that often gets lost in the conversation of its corrosive influence on our society today. But for a moment this summer, a social media campaign driven by netizens on Twitter to bring attention to an injustice that was taking place in real time in Cameroon was a reminder on the power of social media and how it can provide a toolkit for highlighting and mobilizing on an issue or around a cause like that of our next guest. Rebecca Inochong is a well-known Cameroonian-American tech entrepreneur who was arrested and jailed in her hometown of Douala in Cameroon. Rebecca's case would have likely ended up like many of her countrymen and women who are arbitrarily arrested and jailed without trial. Rebecca's arrest sparked outrage on social media with thousands of people calling for her release. And that pressure was enough for authorities in Douala to release her without any formal charges. And Rebecca joins me on the show today to tell us her side of the story. All right, so Rebecca, for those who are not familiar with your story, talk to us about what happened. Why did you get arrested?
So as I said, as you rightly said, I was in Cameroon, and I had been following up on some letters that I had left to the Attorney General, and apparently he was not happy with the fact that I was following up on these letters, I suppose, because I was arrested without a complaint. I never saw any complaint. I was called to the gendarmerie, you know, on a false motive. I was told that the first time it was for to meet, it was a courtesy visit. And the second time they said it was to sign a document. And so, you know, I was then held for 3 nights and four full days.
So you went in the second time. The first time they let you go, but the second time when you were supposed to go sign paperwork, did they tell you you were under arrest?
At first, they did not tell me. I asked them several times, am I under arrest? And they said that I wasn't, but they said we did not say that. But at 8:30 p.m., this was Tuesday, 8:30 p.m., they notified me officially and gave me the document saying that I was officially in detention, detained. Okay.
All right. So earlier they said you're not under arrest, but you're not free to go.
Exactly.
How often does this kind of thing happen to a regular person in Cameroon?
You know, it happens all too often. There was the trial of five young men that were leaving a meeting, and they were leaving an office. It was a Friday, and they were picked up by the gendarmerie, you know, and charged with inciting unrest. They were just leaving a meeting. They were walking in the street. Their trial has been, they were arrested. It's been over a year now.
If you were not the high-profile detainee that you were, is it possible that you would still be in jail right now?
And
if there hadn't been so much noise?
Yeah, I think it's very likely that I would be.
So let's go back to the original reason why they say, quote-unquote, you were arrested. Oh, you were actually arrested. Yeah. The Attorney General was the plaintiff in this case, I guess?
Yes, but he filed a verbal complaint, apparently.
Okay.
Because there was never any written documents that showed what he was not happy with.
So up to now, do you know why he arrested you?
They have never released any documents. And the only statement that was in the file at the time of my arrest was mine. So there was no other paper, there was no other document except for the statement that I'd made on that Monday. And then the following statement that I made on that Tuesday, a witness came on that Friday, but apparently didn't say anything really. It was a secretary. Mm. And so till this day, I don't have a real reason. And they dropped all the charges. And so there won't be any court case. And because we won't be going to court, you know, we don't know, we don't know officially what the reason for the arrest. All we know is on my statement, when it got typed up at the top, they have to put the charges, and up there, they put Article 154 and it said, outrage à une autorité. So it's like, contempt of a public official in the name of the attorney general, in the person of the attorney general, is what it said.
Have you met the attorney general? What kind of dealings did you have with him or his office?
I've met him a couple of times. Pretty tense, I would say. He wasn't the most warm person. I met him, you know, very professionally for less than 5 minutes each time. The first time I believe I met him was in January of this year. I'd been assaulted, and the decision on the person that had been arrested in my assault was in his hands, in the hands of the attorney general. And so I went to explain to him what had happened. I also left a letter with some documents, including medical records. Showing the gravity of the arrest. He decided after that to immediately release the person.
I mean, the Attorney General seems to me like a person who is way up there in the judicial system.
That is correct. So he's in charge of what they call police judiciaire, which means that any investigation that the police does, or the gendarmerie, which is a type of police, any of those that he is ultimately the responsible party.
He's the person who signs off on whatever charges in this case.
So what happens is that we have some state councils, what they call state councils, for each that are with each court. And each of those state councils, for instance, when they've arrested somebody, they will draft a recommendation for each of the people arrested, but then they take it to the attorney general, and the attorney general decides what the fate of that person is. Mm. And it goes much more than that. For instance, in even civil cases, when the opinion of the what they call ministère public or the government is required or requested, it's again the state council that would do that, and many times the state council has to refer back to the attorney general. So really, it would be like a minister of justice plus the head of police, plus in a different country. You know, things are very centralized here. I mean, in Cameroon, as you know. And so, he wields an awful lot of power, for sure. Mm-hmm.
In case you're just joining us, this is Upfront of the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Vunganyi. I'm chatting with Rebecca Enochong, tech entrepreneur who was arrested and jailed in Cameroon for a number of days, only to be released after her arrest sparked outrage on social media and a subsequent campaign for her release.
Now, you were arrested. There's not been any official charges. I guess the case has been closed, though. Are there going to be any consequences, you know, to him as a plaintiff? Is this the end of it? Are you going to take him to court? Or is there any review in process within the system to say, you know, if the attorney general does this, there are consequences to
him? Yeah, unfortunately, we don't have that. I mean, my recourse would be filing a case for illegal detention, in court, but his state councils would be the ones to, you see what I'm saying? It also makes it very complicated for me because, you know, if anything were to happen to me,
he's the man who would support.
Exactly. And so, you know, I feel that because of the international attention and local attention that this matter had, you know, I'm hoping that at least his hierarchy, his upper will make decisions and will sanction. I mean, sanction will. Do something against him very soon. But if they don't, then you know I'll definitely find a way to file something, even if it has to be in an international human rights court, or you know if I have to go to an international court to do so, I will do so because it's unacceptable that anyone that wields this much power would use it, you know, for his own personal purposes.
Right.
And
if in Cameroon, and you say this sometime, you said if you're rich and powerful and innocent, you still go to jail.
Yes.
It was, in a way, it was necessary for you to understand the criminal justice system in Cameroon, how it works.
My case is just another one. It's not exceptional in that it's something that happens and it's recurrent. It's just, I think the difference in my case was simply that, you know, thank you very much to the media, to my friends, to my Twitter community.
To social media. You.
Yeah, the media was incredible. Mm-hmm. And I think that really, really raised awareness on this case. If not, I would probably still be in detention today.
Hello, I'm enjoying your program. I'm Richard Martin Smolki from Nigeria, Taraba State, Gembu, Federal Local Government. Thank you very much.
Girls are good in science, so we just need to change that mindset of boys being the best. The doctors who are female should be role model, and they should be informing the other girls who are in schools that science is good for them and they can do well.
What should be done is to encourage girls to take science subjects. I think first of all begins at home. Sometimes they fear the science subjects.
Now the thing is like this, you know, we girls actually we tend sometimes to branch away from the science subjects. When you try to look at the nurses and the doctors we have around, the majority are men. So what I want to say, and maybe what can encourage them to do science, is are the teachers themselves at school.
Up front show, presented by Jack. Yeah, yeah, boy. Well, it's blessed Barack tuning into the Up Front Show. Well informative for the youths, you know. Rastafari.
Welcome back. We are chatting with tech entrepreneur Rebecca Enochong.
Let's go back to that day, the day when they called you, they summoned you to the police, I guess the second time to sign this document. Were you prepared for detention? And when did you realize that you might be staying overnight?
No, I was not prepared for detention. It was funny because that Monday, I had been prepared for detention. So that Monday, I had gone in.
The first time you went in, you had prepared.
I was wearing a pantsuit. I was, you know, so I was like, I was comfortable. I was like, if I have to spend my night, and I never imagined that it would be more than one night. You know, at least, you know, I wore comfortable, what I call comfortable shoes. And, you know, so I was dressed professionally, but very comfortably. The second day, I was in a dress, I was in heels, I was, you know, I really was not at all prepared physically or mentally on that Tuesday, that's for sure. And I think that, you know, in my mind, because they served me so late with the notification, the official notification of my detention, that's at 8:30 at night, it was very difficult for me to reach out to get support from anyone. And at that point, they took my phones. And so I really was relying on my lawyers and, you know, those people that were still present with me. to communicate. And at that point, I didn't want it to go public because I really thought that I was like, okay, guys, you know, this is going to last one, you know, a few hours, you know, probably around midnight, I realized that this was not going to happen. Like, I was not going to get released, that I was probably going to spend the night. But I didn't think that it would go beyond one day.
Mm. And what was the first night like for you?
It was, I didn't sleep at all.
Did they give you a bed? You
know, no bed. I mean, I wasn't in a cell, but in the cell, they have no beds either. But I wasn't in the cell because the cell was all male, right? This is like the hardcore criminals that they have. It's a section called Bureau du Grand Lutte. It's for the big criminals, violent criminals. And so they don't have a facility in there for women. And so they put me in the office that's right next to the cell. But it's, I don't know if you've seen the state of our those offices in Cameroon, but it was, you know, so I had a plastic chair, you know, those plastic chairs that they have at events. And I sat in that all night. Yes, all night. There were no toilet facilities. You know, there was a captain that was in the office next door, but that office wasn't available overnight. So I had to wait for him to come and use his toilet the following morning.
Wow. But
the second
after the first night, did they transfer you anywhere else
with
better facilities?
In a different office, this time that had air conditioning. And it was, you know, it was still a chair, you know, and that night I had brought in, because I figured I was going to stay longer than I thought. So I had some sheets and towels and things brought in. And so I spent part of the night on the floor thinking I would sleep on the floor. But then I was face to face with some other detainees, I would say, that were mice and other unwelcome. So I was like, oh, maybe I'm not gonna do this. So I got back on the chair. It was a much more comfortable chair. It was like a cushioned chair. I got back on the chair. So I probably got a couple hours of sleep.
That's night number two?
That's night number two, yeah. And night number three was in the same location, and I did not get on the floor. I mean, I skipped the floor. And as I think I mentioned this last time, was I needed to use the toilet, but that there was no toilet, and so I had to use a bottle of, you know, an empty bottle of water, you know. And, yeah.
What was going through your mind? This seems to be. I mean, what was going through your mind at this time?
I was worried that you might stay there longer. I think what I missed the most was freedom. Right. It wasn't so much the condition, because as difficult as the conditions were, they were much better than most detainees, right? Most detainees are in a cell with, mm-hmm. you know, lots of other people, some of whom have killed. I was in a much safer place than I would have been if I was in a general cell. But I was also very concerned for my safety and security, because you know, anything could happen. I mean, anything could happen. The guards were, you know, there were two guards, but they were sleeping, and they were sleeping on mattresses, by the way. they were sleeping on mattresses very comfortably. Anybody could have, you know, I think that they could have very well broken in and harmed me. And I think that my lawyers and people around me were actually very afraid of, you know, some incident happening at the gendarmerie. And I think that even the gendarmerie was afraid of something happening there, because they really wanted to be gone.
You're listening to Upfront on the Voice of America. Let's take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Yes, women of today are struggling, but I think you wouldn't compare their struggles to those of the past. I would say technology has exposed the world to so many things. Let's just look at education. For a woman to make it even in university, she needs a lot of effort. For the women of the past, education was not a priority. Marriage was a priority at that time.
Meanwhile, the world has changed. Everything has changed. We are in a modern world. In the past, we didn't have an internet. In the past, people did not observe some human rights.
And in the past, because women were not empowered, men were abusing them in so many ways. We're not considered as important as men. But now, many girls are educated.
Most of women in Malawi, they are still not employed because we still have this gender gap in our country whereby some women are not considered as material for professional jobs. That's a very big challenge. On that one, I would say women are suffering because they would look for a job for almost 6 months and then they just get tired and leave it.
Welcome back. We are chatting with tech entrepreneur Rebecca Enochong. And in many ways, we are highlighting what we see as a positive side of social media. See, over the years on this show, we have covered social media's capacity to be a force for good in the world, especially in the way people use it for civic activism, for social justice campaign, mobilization, and community engagement. Rebecca's case is a primary example of that. And we're glad she was able to join us on the show to talk to us about her story.
Do you think they were surprised, or even the Attorney General, do you think they were all surprised at the type of reaction your detention got?
Yeah, I think so. They were surprised. I was surprised. So, I think they were surprised. Definitely at the gendarmerie, from the very next morning, I felt as though they didn't want this anymore. You know, they really, that's the impression that I had. And they're actually the ones that told me that it was starting to go in media.
Because you didn't have the phone at the time, you didn't know what was happening.
Exactly. So I was getting it third, you know, secondhand from the gendarmes or from the lawyers, or, you know, I was receiving some visits and people were telling me a little bit about what was happening. But
the police were annoyed at the Attorney General at the type of attention that he might have brought to them.
I wouldn't assume that they were very happy about it. And as I said, they really kept wanting to get rid of me. Like, they kept dropping me off at the state council's office and then like, please. And they would drop me in the Thursday, they actually dropped me and left. And then they got called to pick me up again. And they were like, oh no, please. No. But yeah.
They were put in a very awkward position.
Yeah, but I think they partially put themselves in that position because
I mean, they were following orders from the higher ups. I imagine they have very little power.
Came from the Attorney General, and certainly he has the right to order somebody's arrest. But when he's the plaintiff, at least get it in writing so that, you know, you have something that you can then use to defend your actions. But all of this apparently was done over the phone during the time that they were taking my statement on Monday. The colonel was reading the questions from his phone. It's almost like they sent him the questions by WhatsApp or something like that. Because there was not a single document. And I think that, you know, in cases such as these, the least you should do, you know, when you're police or, you know, law enforcement, is to ensure that you have all your ducks in order.
Does it appear that the Attorney General does this quite frequently to kind of show his power, you know, flaunt his power and intimidate or extort or manipulate?
I don't think he does it for complaints that he's filing. Mm. Right. So I think that you know, he does assert his authority, you know, in these ways, you know, many instances. But, you know, I don't know of another case where he is the plaintiff.
Mm. In the case of the person who assaulted you, was that never came to the courts? Are you following up?
No, the person was on trial, but I was on trial, three on trial. And, you know, it's another case where when the case went for deliberation and we're expecting a decision in June of this year, the other judicial authorities, not because the guy that assaulted me is like a common criminal, he's been arrested like seven times, mm-hmm. but because I was the victim, and you know, it's a way to shut me up. You know, there are a whole bunch of people intervening on his behalf, or against me, I should say, is the better way of saying it. And so therefore, the case was reopened. So instead of, you know, going for deliberation, the case was reopened for, they wanted a medical reexamination, which I was prepared to comply with. Until the guy that assaulted me actually asked, recused the judge and appealed the decision to have the medical reexamination. And see, since he's doing this free, you know, we're just going to lose, you know, years, maybe months. Months, maybe years, as a result of that. You know, we're already in September. The appeal hasn't even been set for trial at the Court of Appeal. You know, it could be years. You know, I have another case
where it's very likely you won't receive the justice. And yeah. I mean, this person is going to, he's been released and his trial happened when he was at home. You know,
yeah.
But you were not granted the same privilege.
No, because I'm, you know, I'm bothering these people. You know, I exist. And, you know, the fact that I exist bothers them.
How often do you go to Cameroon? And are you worried now about your travel and the frequency of your travel to Cameroon?
I'm actually more in Cameroon than I am in the U.S. I travel a lot internationally. It's just COVID that you know, I got caught up in Cameroon for a long period because of travel restrictions, and then have been traveling less, but I spend more time in general in Cameroon than I do in the U.S. But yeah, that's something that I got out of Cameroon as quickly as I could after I was released. And, you know, I have some ongoing matters there and I need to attend to them. But yeah, but I do have concerns for my safety. Yes, absolutely.
And finally, Rebecca, first of all, thank you for, you know, sharing your story with us as we come to the end of our conversation today. I want to ask you how this moment or this episode or this incident in your life is shaping your professional and personal life.
I think it's you know, to be seen. I'm not sure yet. I think I'm still trying to recover. You know, psychologically and professionally. I obviously, you know, a lot of work was not done. And, you know, even after I was released, it's taken me a little bit of time to get caught up. So I'm not quite sure I can answer that question right now.
Are you going to be more outspoken on social justice issues?
Yeah, but as I said, they've done me a service in that they've given me legitimacy in discussing issues of social justice.
No, you have street cred.
Yeah, I guess I have street cred, yes. I can even be a rapper now, right?
Rebecca, thank you so much for talking to us.
No, thank you, Jackson, and thank you very much for the support from the media.
And with that, we come to the end of our show. Many thanks to our guest, Rebecca Enochong. You can follow her on Twitter at Africa Techie. And thanks to all of you, whether you're listening in live, on FM or shortwave or online. You can find the podcast for this episode and others on our website at voanews.com. And remember to connect with us on social media. We are at VOA Upfront on Twitter, on Facebook and on Instagram. I am at Upfront Africa. Let's meet again here next week. I'm Jackson Vunganyi, sending you my best wishes. Goodbye, everyone.